Just a brief framing. Just, in organizations, they have this, whenever there is a succession or a generation change, they have this tacit knowledge, you know, which they try to capture from the top leaders so that the next generation of leaders, they can get advantage of their insights and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same lines, the GBC College has taken up this service initiative to capture the insights or realizations of the senior leaders who personally trained that role, so that this can help the formation of the future training programs. So now the first section, there's a few sections. The first is regarding the founder's mood and mission. So what important instructions and leadership examples of Srila Prabhupada do you feel we need to preserve as an institution and a society and transmit them for the longevity and solidarity of the movement?
As an institution or as an individual quality?
As an institution, what all instruction and leadership examples of Prabhupada are very essential to be preserved to
preserve the institution?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying, because...
Yeah.
I mean, there are sometimes individual qualities that are important for passing on, but they may not necessarily keep the institution together. So I want to know, is it for the institution or for the growth of the individual?
It's for the institution as a whole, and of course it's comprised of individuals, but primarily as an institution, what instructions and examples of Prabhupada do we need to preserve and transmit?
Well, I think to survive as an institution, although Srila Prabhupada did speak about it, sometimes I say more important than, or just as important than what he spoke about was his behavior. Because Prabhupada even himself said that example is more important than precept. And in Prabhupada's life, what he embodied, which I think is an essential quality for preserving his institution, is the ability to respect others. I see that as a very fundamental principle taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself in his instructions, embodied by Srila Prabhupada in his examples, in his qualities, in his instructions, in his speech, because definitely a lot of it in his letters to his disciples, is that we have a tendency in our institution to not emphasize the need for respect. And sometimes when there are opposing views between individuals on how to apply Prabhupada's instructions, this lack of or inability to suitably respect the opinions of others is destructive. And if we can learn that individually and collectively in a way that's brings it more to the focus in all of our dealings with each other, I believe it will really help to preserve Srila Prabhupada's institution.
The next question is, any areas of Prabhupada's teachings or aspects of his vision which have not so much been developed, and what are some of those areas which we should now prioritize, because there are so many things which Prabhupada said, but which areas we should now going forward prioritize the first 2-3 things should kind of looking on?
I personally embrace as one of the most important priorities for the welfare of ISKCON today and for its successful continuation into future generations, is the emphasis on the need to study his books. I believe that many devotees who are coming to our society now, if they are going to be our future, are not sufficiently educated, not always, in all places, but in many places I find insufficient a desire to know Srila Prabhupada. I think the greatest danger for ISKCON presently and in the future is to not know the personality of Srila Prabhupada in his teachings. If too much emphasis is given on current leaders and their personalities, their instructions, their qualities, without first inculcating within their followers the desire to know more about Srila Prabhupada, that will lead towards degradation of the society. I don't necessarily say that that devotees are not reading books, and I'm not necessarily saying that only by reading books is the only way we can know Srila Prabhupada. Certainly, I think the first generation disciples of Srila Prabhupada have a very, very important responsibility to give Prabhupada to their dependents by speaking about him, speaking about their realizations of him, and preserving Prabhupada's mood as he taught in his books, which the devotees had learned. So much more emphasis has to be there on Srila Prabhupada's instructions given in his books and in his personality. And I definitely feel that every devotee in this Krishna consciousness movement must have read at least once, if not many times, Prabhupada Lilamrita, the full volumes, from beginning to end.
So we come to the next section regarding your personal practices. So if you could share some of the personal practices and principles which over the period of decades you have kind of learnt and imbibed and held on to, and which you feel are very important also for, you know, upcoming devotee leaders to imbibe in their lives.
Personal practices. Meaning sadhana or practices, personal practices?
In respect to consuming sadhana, then dealing with people as a leader. So,
as leaders, I think one of the personal practices that I've tried very hard to be consistent in my practices is in my desire to hear from others and to hear others. I believe as a leader, all leaders have a responsibility to be able to sit down and hear the concerns of others. And sometimes there's a tendency to be in a leadership position to feel that I can immediately understand this person. I don't need to listen to what they have to say. I think I already can give them the solution. I found that many times it's more effective in giving them a solution just by hearing them than by trying to impose what you may think is the solution which doesn't touch their heart. So to avoid that phenomena, I think it's important responsibility for leaders to be able to hear from their dependents and to hear their concerns and to see that if others are having difficulties in their own Krishna consciousness, to be a leader in Krishna consciousness and a preacher means that we have to share some of the responsibility for others' difficulties. Because if I'm supposed to be a preacher, that means that I'm supposed to help those who are around me and those who hear from me. And if they're not advancing, then there must be something lacking in me as well. So, rather than simply find the fault in the person who's having difficulties, I think we also have to be willing to look within ourselves to see if I've possibly contributed to this individual's or group's problems that they're having, and try to also improve myself.
Thank you, that's a very unique practice and principle. The next question is regarding, if you could recount one or two of the most successful projects during your tenure as a leader.
Well, if it's successful, it's not because of me. That's for sure. That's my first realization. If it's successful, it's because Prabhupada wanted it. So I'm just simply serving. But it's not because of me. And if it's successful, it's because the devotees understood how much Prabhupada wanted it and therefore executed it in a way that was pleasing to him. My business is to be transparent and not to get in the way of the devotees' enthusiasm to serve Prabhupada. And I don't see that, I mean, I cannot at least attribute anything successful simply to myself. I believe that there has been a lot of success in the areas where I'm preaching, but I can give my, like, for instance, my own experience of preaching in the former Soviet Union in the early days. I oftentimes used to tell devotees that by going there, I found that the devotees had a very strong inclination to hear. And they were really, really enthusiastic to hear from me. And I didn't think it was necessarily that I was such a good speaker, but their desire to hear was so strong that Krishna was reciprocating with their desire, and I was simply getting caught in the crossfire. I happened to be at the right place at the right time. So that's my experience in many respects. In places where I do preach, I see whenever the devotees have a strong desire to hear, then I feel encouraged and inspired to speak. I try to speak in such a way that reflects Srila Prabhupada's mood and to help devotees connect with Prabhupada's desires and his vision for spreading Krishna consciousness. And I believe that's what Srila Prabhupada taught, that is the example he taught, which inspires me the most, of how transparent he was in spreading Krishna consciousness. And he was always simply conscious of his subordinate position in relationship to the instructions that were given to him by his spiritual master. And because I'm so inspired by Prabhupada's example in that respect, I try to practice it myself and see that wherever I am able to at least practice that, there is some success. So I don't consider myself to be such an effective manager. In fact, I believe with the areas which are more successful and places where I do have responsibility, I believe it's they're more successful because I'm not managing and I'm letting others manage. And I guess maybe that can be seen as something I very strongly believe in, that is empowering others to take up responsibility and giving them a sense of empowerment and support, and letting them, if necessary, make some mistakes, and letting them to learn from their mistakes and showing and demonstrating a willingness to still give them my support despite whatever small mistakes they may have. And I try to correct them in a way that maintains their integrity and important responsibilities that they have in their service. So I'd say to some degree that's what Srila Prabhupada did. So, and because Prabhupada had who he had to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, and looking at myself and from the testimony of many of my god brothers and god sisters, many of them have also expressed that look what Srila Prabhupada had to work with. We're not so qualified, but yet look what he did with this monkey army. And It's because he entrusted upon us big responsibilities, and he gave us faith that it could be done as long as we tried to please him. So I try to follow that rule.
Thank you, Raj. Very helpful. Then we come to the next section regarding leadership training. So if you could suggest some leadership values which should be imparted and inculcated in the training program for the leaders.
What leadership values should be inculcated in the leaders? I believe that leaders in our movement are sometimes forced into a position of having to wear two hats, meaning they have to manage and they have to be spiritual leaders concerned about the individual spiritual growth of everybody who's dependent upon them. And sometimes it's not very easy to fulfill both functions simultaneously. And therefore, you might find somebody who has more strong inclination towards managing, and because he has a stronger inclination towards management, he is looked at as a leader, but his management is more based upon a desire to manage people, manage money, manage assets, and but forgetting that this is a voluntary movement. And because it's a voluntary movement, you can't really manage anybody unless people come forward in a voluntary spirit to do it. We're not supposed to be paying people, we're supposed to be inspiring them. So more important than just managing people and resources is that there's a need to inspire them. And that's where the spiritual leadership comes. Is yes, sometimes it can be very inspirational to be a very well-organized manager, but still people need to be motivated. And motivation comes from one's strength and one's own personal sadhana. Motivation for others comes through the message that one gives in his preaching and by his own example. So, as I said, the difficulties in leaders is that sometimes when they have to wear two hats, then they have to know when to put on the management hat and when to put on the spiritual leadership hat, because sometimes, unfortunately, I have seen it, is that our leaders tend to keep the manager hat on in dealing with individuals when it should be taken off. And the spiritual leader hat should be put on instead to take into consideration what's best for the individual and not what's best for the institution. And I think all of our leaders should know the art of when to wear each hat and when and to whom to apply it according to time, place, and circumstance.
Thank you, man. So, next, any leadership skills that you feel should be included in the training program?
Leadership skills?
Management leadership skills.
Leadership skills. Well, I think I just gave a leadership skill in my previous answer. That a real leader is somebody who's not just simply a manager. And one has to, and a real leader is somebody who understands that just as important as preaching is teaching by their example. And we should be very careful to not force others to do what we are not, ourselves are not doing. But rather than forcing them, oftentimes I even use the example that I was just using this example with some parents just recently. They're trying to teach their children and get their children to do things that they feel that the children don't do it, and then they feel guilty, and their lives may become misdirected, they won't become devotees. And I try to emphasize them that getting children to do the things that you want them to do means that you have to share your enthusiasm for those activities and not force them to do those activities. There's a difference. And many times our leaders try to force devotees to perform certain activities which they feel is very important. But more important is to share our enthusiasm for those activities and that we ourselves are doing. So by sharing our enthusiasm for those activities, it's more inspirational than forced.
So,
I think this is a quality of a leader that needs to be taught. Not that he has to be so expert in keeping the books. Not that he has to be so expert in corporate management. And that's my greatest fear for ISKCON in the future. I don't know if that question will come up at any point, but my greatest fear in the future is that we become too much absorbed in corporate management and we lose a sense of the individual spiritual growth of ISKCON's members.
Well, that's right. The next question is regarding a SWOT analysis, an analysis of the strengths.
SWOT. Strength, weaknesses, opportunities. I did look that up. I said, what the heck is a SWOT? When I saw it, so I did use Google. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities,
and threats.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, what's the question? So
the first question is: what do you see as the core strengths of present-day ISKCON, what we have built over the last 50 years, and is there with us as a strength? And now we need to preserve and maintain that moving forward while we do other things.
Mm-hmm.
So what are those core strengths we need to preserve?
The core strength that exists today, fortunately, is the leaders' ability to continue to cooperate in accordance with Srila Prabhupada's desire in a global mission. I believe that that's our strength, and that strength comes from our love for Prabhupada. And because that love is so prevalent in the hearts of many of those who are not only Srila Prabhupada's first generation disciples, but I believe many of our leaders have been successful in impacting Srila Prabhupada into the lives of their dependents, that gives us strength against Maya. That gives us strength to be effective in spreading Krishna consciousness, and it gives us strength to keep our movement together. There's always a risk that we may lose that strength, and therefore I think the caution we should take is to never forget the importance of keeping Srila Prabhupada in the forefront in the hearts of all the devotees, both first generation and future generations.
Thank you. So, the counterpart question regarding the weaknesses. So, these do you see as underlying weaknesses or, say, shortcomings in the way the present day ISKCON is operating?
I believe that one of the weaknesses that has evolved over the years, there's many weaknesses, but one which is pronounced in my mind is temple life. Yeah, I believe that I was observed in many places that the way we lived in the temples and Srila Prabhupada's manifest presence, the spirit of the temple being the point of focus in lives of the devotees who live in the temple and the devotees in the congregations outside the temple, I believe our weakness is it's gone under focus. I believe that we've become too much festival oriented, and which is nice. There's value in festivals, but if the core members of our society survive only and are active only from one festival to the next, and then between festivals they're virtually not even visible, then we've really missed Prabhupada's boot. And I believe that it's a weakness now that we've not been able to retain that same spirit of both a temple lifestyle, a temple support from the congregation, and a very high standard of deity worship that Srila Prabhupada expected in the temple, which he himself personally established in his physical presence. I find it very disappointing to see deities, for instance, being worshipped by first initiated devotees, uninitiated devotees, cooks, uninitiated devotees. And I believe there could be many reasons for it beyond the scope of this answer that I would give at this point. Too much license for home worship, I think this is one problem. Not enough emphasis on the temple worship of the deities. It's a weakness. And I am concerned about it for the future.
So next, regarding opportunities, so which do you see as the biggest opportunities which we should now look on capitalizing for the upcoming future?
Biggest opportunities to capitalize on. I'd say the biggest opportunities we should capitalize on is the fact that people are suffering more than ever. And we should capitalize on it and give them a positive alternative. And that's what Srila Prabhupada did. Prabhupada was always somebody who emphasized how Krishna consciousness is a positive alternative. We have to look at how people are suffering in their day-to-day lives, and we have to try to awaken them to the understanding as ways they can improve their lives by adding Krishna consciousness to their lives. It may not, and we have to, I think that's a big opportunity. Everywhere I go, I'm always meeting people, and I'm always hearing how much people are looking for alternatives, ways to live. And I don't think we're capitalizing on that. And the temple, in some instances, may not be the answer for these people. I definitely am an advocate of finding different venues and opportunities to reach out to people outside the temple venue. But I believe that our goal should be whatever way that we bring them from the outside venues, we should always bring them, continue to bring them to the temples, and to not be so absorbed in establishing institutions and organizations. I guess it's called bridge preaching. An example I oftentimes give is that in the efforts devotees to establish bridge preaching programs, that sometimes we see there's too much emphasis on the bridge itself, and people forget that bridge is supposed to bring people to the other side. Otherwise, what's the value of a bridge unless it brings people to the other side? So we should capitalize on this opportunity that many people are looking for a different paradigm than what they're currently living in. And we should show them that there is a different paradigm.
Thank you, Maharaj. Last, we come to the threat. So, we do see as the biggest threats to the movement in the near future?
Biggest threat to the movement I see is when spiritual leaders try to become institutions unto themselves and forget that to be a spiritual leader in Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON means you must always be a subordinate member to the leaders, and you should teach your followers and dependents to be active participants in Srila Prabhupada's mission, and not to have separate institutions which may mislead one's own followers or strong preachers to think that simply to be a member of that institution is sufficient in of itself. I see that as the biggest threat. I see that as potentially becoming too sectarian, and I see that as becoming a source of significant division in the future of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, unless it's checked. That potential is checked before it gets too out of hand.
You were also mentioning about the fear previously that when you become too much corporate oriented in the approach. So, if you would elaborate a little on that here in terms of threats.
Too much fear of the corporate approach?
Yeah.
Well, too much fear of the corporate approach, I simply meant, was that we become more absorbed in preserving the institution and forgetting about the individual needs of its members. I call it putting a form over substance. If you have a very nice form, a shell, but if inside it's hollow, then it will collapse. Without substance, what's the value of form? So in the same way, if we become too much absorbed in a corporate ISKCON, which is more emphasis on form, then the danger is to be less focused on substance. And substance means individual spiritual growth of the members in terms of their sadhana, in terms of their own spiritual practices, and in terms of their own growth and evolution of Krishna consciousness, which is something that Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted for all of his followers to become Krishna conscious and to become qualified to go back to Godhead. I don't necessarily see that simply having a strong corporate ISKCON will give everyone the opportunity to go back to Godhead. I believe substance. We always have to be careful not to de-emphasize the substance in the name of form.
Thank you so much. These are very, very valuable insights. Come to the last question regarding taking a look at the future. So, we'd like you to visualize your dream vision for a successful, rapidly growing worldwide ISKCON movement 25 years from now. So, what all features and aspects do you see in that vision, in that dream vision?
25 years from now? Specifically 25 years?
25.
Okay. I see 25 years now means that probably practically everybody who's currently sitting on the GBC body probably won't be there. So I would see, like to see a GBC body consisting of members who have imbibed the spirit of Srila Prabhupada's followers, first generation followers, and have at least once read every single one of Srila Prabhupada's books, and have read all of Srila Prabhupada's letters, have read all of Srila Prabhupada, everything about Srila Prabhupada. I believe that if we have a body of individuals governing the society who have this spirit, then I see hope for the future. But if we don't bring into the governing body commission, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted for the continuation of his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He wanted it managed by a governing body commission. And if we don't have individuals on that governing body commission of that quality, then I shudder to think what his karma will be like. And by saying this, I want to make it clear that I'm not in any way saying that there'll never be another person in Prabhupada's ISKCON who will be self-effulgent leader, who could inspire the whole society. I mean, I certainly hope that there'll be some guiding lights for the future in Srila Prabhupada's movement, who may even become individually a source of spiritual strength and who may manifest in Prabhupada's movement in the future to be that guiding light for his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I would be happy to see it. But he's not there now. He's not present now. At least none of us have recognized him. So therefore, Prabhupada did want a governing body commission. And in the absence of such a personality, then the governing body commission, I would like to see it consisting of people who know everything about Prabhupada.
Yes. This is also in terms of the socio-cultural ecosystem of ISKCON. Any things that you would like to see, in terms of community, in terms of the cultural?
Well, certainly, I would like to see communities. I won't call them Varnashram communities. They are Varnashram communities, but we're still studying Varnashram. I don't really feel that anybody yet has provided the complete blueprint. Prabhupada gave us a foundation for sure, and you could say that that's something that we've really not been able to come up to. It's something that Srila Prabhupada wanted, but it hasn't manifested. I definitely would like to see more rural communities with devotees engaged in worship of the deities in the center of their communities, and with the devotees working in the self-sufficient communities and teaching by their ideal example, again, how to live a simple life, or as Prabhupada oftentimes emphasized, simple living and high thinking. We've, in many respects, have failed to establish such communities. And I believe that 25 years from now, if we can come to that standard as well, not only for temples in the cities, but temples in rural areas, such as communities, for families, to where they can raise their children, where they can grow food, where they can protect cows, and where they can attract people to that positive alternative which I spoke about before, which was what Srila Prabhupada really wanted people to see, that this is the positive alternative to live, is this type of lifestyle with Krishna at the center. Yes, I would certainly like to see places of that nature as well.
Right. I'm tempted to ask about also devotee care, which you emphasize so much. So what do you
say? I do emphasize devotee care, yes.
25 years from now, or do you see the future of that aspect of?
I think that goes without saying. I guess maybe I should have probably represented my point of view that I should have blown my horn, as the expression is used, on the topic of devotee care. I spoke about it indirectly, I guess you could say, by saying that we should have the type of leaders who care for the devotees more than just simply the institution. So I did speak about it, but I didn't use the word. And devotee care. But I think if you go back and reflect on many of the things I've already said, you'll see that devotee care was a very intrinsic part of everything that I was speaking about. In fact, just recently I had to write an introduction to a book on devotee care. It was a book that was written in Russian and for the devotees in Ukraine. And in my introduction, I gave the example that in the 1970s, when I grew up in ISKCON, you never heard the words devotee care. It was never talked about. But the point that I made in the introduction was that although it wasn't discussed as a department or as an initiative or something that needed to be taken care of, devotee care in those days was something that was like, it was just like built in. It was a built-in feature that I experienced and I grew up in, that it's because Srila Prabhupada was always demonstrating it by his example. Excuse me? Yes, I'm actually on the last question. So, and anyways, in answer to the question is, I believe that a lot of the points I already said were spoken in the mood of devotee care. I just didn't use the words. Devotee care. I believe our leaders definitely, as I said, have to be capable of wearing the devotee care hat or the spiritual leader hat and making decisions in terms of what is in the best interest of the devotee rather than what is in the best interest or immediate need for the institution. I believe that's a very important element of devotee care. And without caring for devotees, then you won't have a voluntary movement. Yeah. So, anyways.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Okay.
Very, very sweet and material and very helpful.
And I hope you'll forgive me that I just refused the video and that this will be satisfactory.
This will be very helpful and valuable resource for the curriculum development also, and also for future leaders to look and see that this is how, you know, say suppose 25 years from now we play for them. Okay, this is the vision of the GPC members, of the bus, of Prabhupada's disciples, that they want to see a GPC body consisting of members who have imbibed spirit of Prabhupada's first generation followers, have read all the letters, all the books, then it rings a bell that, yeah, this is what they wanted us to do.
Uh-huh.
We will try to create this repository and for future leaders to use. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Okay.
Personally, I take a lot of inspiration and I admire a lot your lectures since many years. In fact, on this Vyas Puja, the proper disappearance day,
uh-huh.
Your Gaurang Prabhu was asking me that how did you like? So I said it was both heart touching and thought provoking. So your point, you mentioned that we should do our service conscious of the object of service and whom we are doing it for. So that really. I found very enriching.
Relevant,
enriching. And I just started thinking who, I recently heard the same thing. So then I started thinking and then I realized that Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Maharaj,
uh-huh.
When we asked him some of his personal practices, so he said the same thing. He said, this is my consistent practice since decades now, that whenever I do service, I try to be conscious that Prabhupada is looking, he's watching, he's reacting, he's becoming happy or kind of a little bit disturbed with what I am doing. He said that, so that I also try to convey to my dependents.
Uh-huh.
So he said when he was in a temple on a Janmashtami way back in 1970s, So he was asked to stay back. He was thinking everyone is getting Prabhupada's association. In London there was this temple opening and he was in another temple. He was asked to stay back while everyone else went for the DT installation. So he said, but that day, that was the most Prabhupada conscious day of my life. Because I was just in the mood that Prabhupada has given the service to me and he is seeing that how am I organizing the Janmashtami festival.
Uh-huh.
And then he said that since then I have tried to make this as my practice, be conscious of whom I am.
Very nice.
I just wanted to
sure.